Welcome to the Happiness Habit Podcast. I'm your host, Kara Payton, and this is your resource for becoming the happiest person you know. This show dives deep into the heart of life's biggest matters. You can expect to hear from the names you know, sharing a raw look into their souls from their realest moments with God to their biggest heartbreaks in love and greatest lessons in life. If you're new here, subscribe or follow and share with a friend. You never know what message they truly needed to hear. And if you've been around for a while, welcome home. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get to the show. Hey there all, hey there all, welcome back. Well, you read the title. Today we're going to rattle some cages. We are going to talk about the beauty industry and the web that we have weaved, the mess that we have created, and our destructive obsession with outer appearances, keeping up appearances, making sure that that ever-moving goalpost is constantly chased after, regardless of the fact that that's literally at the starting line. We know that that's impossible, and yet we still cross it hand over fist. We still go there. We still attempt to. And some of us have either, you know, bitterly opted out, or we are determined that we are going to cross that finish line in some way and attain this social crown of what is to be considered beautiful. And I wanted to start by breaking down why this one thing seems to be so potentially poisonous for us. And because, unfortunately, in society, in the world, for as long as it has been, as long as we have had eyes, so forever, this does provide us with some unspoken rewards. It does have significant benefits to the life of someone who would be considered societally beautiful and one who does not. So I came up with five reasons why this is actually a really detrimental thing on so many other levels. And then we're going to go a little bit deeper and hopefully break free of some of these chains. If you're going through some, if you are somebody who really, really cares about your external appearances, if you're not, if you've been resigned to it, if you are absolutely, completely, utterly obsessed with this, this episode will be for you. So, number one, you know, unfortunately, having external beauty, it does cover a multitude of shortcomings in today's world. You can be very unintelligent and still make a pretty good life for yourself by using the asset of beauty, unfortunately. And people utilize this. They do have these little micro exchanges that go on in their lives that work out in their favor more often because they are a beautiful person. Even as something as simple and shallow as a job interview will lean one way or another. And that's just the way it is. I'm not saying it's a broad brush that every single time, 100 times out of 100, will work out that way. But I am saying when it comes to the grand scheme of things, there are personal appearances that do come into the fold way more often than we are probably even privy to. So it covers a multitude of shortcomings. Number two is that it is an asset that can be used for transaction. Let's just be real. OnlyFans would not be a place, would not be a thing if you're not necessarily seeing people that are unattractive making, you know, 6-7 figures a year. It can be used for transaction and to their benefit. It is freaking profitable, guys. To be beautiful, it's profitable. It's just the, I mean, like, I don't want to talk about OnlyFans and Pornhub like it's not the only place it shows up, but it is profitable to be beautiful, to be an influencer with beauty, to be an influencer without beauty. Their bank statements do not look the same. Let's just be as shallow as that is. That's just not the same result. And, you know, number three is it helps us skip steps. It really does. It gives you a leg up. It gives you a leg up. It qualifies you in ways that we don't like to admit. We do not care to admit this, but we have seen this tenfold. We have seen people that just are in positions that they're not qualified for. They were not educated for. They were not prepared for. And they're there. They're absolutely gorgeous. And whoever's, you know, it's like, well, who is that? It's like, well, it's so-and-so, so-and-so. And they're in a position that wasn't necessarily earned. but it's because it was earned from an outer covering, an outer compensation. Number four is it hides true ugliness. We know people overlook inner ugliness for outer beauty all the time. If that were not the case, the whole frame of mail order brides would not be a thing. And I know that that's kind of an archaic example because maybe it's more relevant today than it's ever been, but I heard the term mail order bride when I was a teenager years and years and years ago. I don't know if that's really still a thing, but I know that people hand over fist get overlooked for who they really are because they're beautiful enough to cover for it. Number five, it kind of wraps these all into one, but it talks about more of the day-to-day, the nitty-gritty, the every single granular transaction, conversation, interaction out there in the world, is it provides unspoken status. If you're beautiful, you are automatically just assumed to be better than you really are. And if you think I'm wrong, how many times have you seen someone that is very attractive and then found out that they were just a X, just a Y, just a Z? You're like, oh my God, you're beautiful. You should be. How many times have we done that, guys? I don't know how many times I've run into somebody or met somebody out there and be like, you know, he was homeless, but he was gorgeous. I'm like, why is he homeless? If he had been ugly, I would say, why is he homeless? I can be that honest and say, like, I just assume that beautiful people belong in higher places. And God, does that suck to know that about my humanity and know that about my very, we'll say it, lizard amygdala, you know, lower human functioning brain, that I think that about people. But it's like, you automatically assume that because they're gorgeous, because they're beautiful, that there's something better about them. And we may not want to admit it, but we have seen this industry unfold into way more than an industry. It's the one thing that is in our homes, that influences our homes, whether we like to admit it or not. It's everywhere. We have seen very unattractive people try to make up their way to beauty. And while it's so much worse to see somebody, you've ever seen put a lipstick on a pig. I've heard that phrase, like lipstick on a pig. It's like lipstick on a pig. Even though, you know, we'll say unattractive, even ugly people will make themselves up. It's like, oh my gosh, it's so much worse. Just stop. It demonstrates this one thing that does is it demonstrates the striving to achieve this social acceptance, trying to buy in to the five markers that I just shared. Is that we'll see, and we see this all the time. If you do not see it, go look up on TikTok or YouTube or whatever the term catfishing, and your mind will be blown. 6 months ago or so, I discovered that. I saw these people that would be like, you know, they don't have any teeth. They are, you know, just very, very homely, unattractive looking people. And then within an hour, they are as polished as a Kardashian at the end of it. It's like, oh my God, we can literally make up our reality, make it up, make up. it's complete make-believe. This person is not beautiful, but an hour later, you would never know. It can be hidden. And so I'll transition to this and break this out because this is probably a little inflammatory to talk about because it is a little bit more ugly truth. But if you want to, I'll relate it to my own personal story, is that for a while there, especially inflamed by a relationship that I was in where I felt like I had to continue to jump over higher and higher hurdles. And most of them I was setting for myself, but it was setting for myself because I was in a relationship with a very attractive person. Hey y'all, I hope you're enjoying the episode. We're going to keep diving after this quick break. I hope you are loving this episode. We have more gold to drop on you, but first I want to give you a gift. If you find yourself endlessly trying to think your way through the same old beliefs or generally feel stuck in all the mindset stuff, there is a better way to level up and tap into a whole new you. Wake up with energy, clarity, and tap into the most authentic version of yourself to create a life you love with this daily practice. Head over to carapayton.com/daily to get your gift. Externally, and I was trying to kind of measure up or at least even the playing field and measure up to, if not greater, that be the prettier one in the relationship. And I went down a spiral of obsessive behaviors when it came to keeping up external appearances. I mean, my regimen per month probably was in the 4-digit marker. I'm not even kidding. Between the extensions, between the filler, the Botox, the chin, the under eyes, the extensions, the tanning, the working out, the nails, the smoothing, all of it, right down to eyelash extensions, and doing it myself on a professional level, and spending hours and hours each day before I would even, and not even permitting myself to leave the house before this regimen was completed. And if I didn't feel like doing it that day, I made myself kind of like tolerably cute to stay in the house. And it was, I see pictures of this woman from years ago, and I think now, God, you know, how beautiful was she? But I would not back then. I deleted pictures of myself. I was like, do not post that. Do not share that. Ugh, I don't like that one. Ugh, I hate that one. And it was very self-deprecating when I didn't even recognize what I had, what I had achieved, what I had attained. And I'll be honest, guys, I look back at pictures of her back then, and it proves to me so much. But the greatest thing that it proves to me is like, I didn't recognize it then. While I was in the middle of it, while I was my most beautiful, quote unquote, most externally beautiful and attractive, I could look in the mirror at that time in my life and have torn myself down. And I have since let go of those things, let go of my obsession with those things, and I've stopped the maintenance appointments, we'll say. I took out the extensions, I stopped doing the Botox and the fillers and the crazy long resurfacing treatments and all of the stuff that I was doing to myself. And I gotta be honest, it's staggering to this day to know that I had it and I didn't recognize it. So I still have this proof in myself that anytime I think about going back there, because it's tempting, I'm not gonna lie. I'm 37 years old. And no, I don't have any really, really, really heavy fine lines. I do have signs of aging. I do have signs that the things are not where they used to be and not as smooth or firm or whatever as they used to be. And I will still fall into that temptation, almost like a little golden carrot. It's like, oh, you're literally only $1,000 away from being where you used to be. You're only $1,000 away from being societally beautiful and acceptable again. And it gets very, very, very tempting to just go, you know what? This is uncomfortable. To be myself in my own skin sometimes is uncomfortable. I felt so much more secure. Granted, it was a false security, but I felt so much more secure in myself when I used to look like a supermodel. When I used to forge and fake and mask every single part of me, it was so much better because I wasn't exposed. I wasn't as vulnerable to criticism, so I thought. To me, I insulated myself from criticism. And now I'm not insulated. And it feels eye-opening and sobering sometimes to feel that exposed, even though I didn't do anything. Nothing changed. I just stopped doing this crazy, insane regimen. And to me, that translated into being more exposed to the world. So I want to break down my own personal story to tell you how this obsession is destructive, because I don't think we really think about this often, because we fold it into our getting ready. Our getting ready routine should be nothing more than, well, should be, ignore that. I don't mean should be. I mean, when it talks about getting ready for your day just means how to prepare for literally walking out of your house, which is nothing more than getting dressed in decent, you know, to have decency, to be not indecently exposed, and wear shoes and wear whatever you are to prepare for the weather. The rest of it, the hair, the makeup, the whatever, that is all this beauty. We have woven in beauty so heavily that we put it in a part of our quote unquote getting ready routine when it has nothing to do with that. That is just society dumping on an extra part of our task list and routine, and we've just normalized it. So let's talk about how this is destructive. And I have six ways that this ends up unfolding as destructive. And I only have, just so you know, going further in this episode, I only have three ways of how it's productive. So how it's destructive is that, here's the just blatant out there truth, is that beauty is randomized. It is a lottery. It is a lottery. It's genetically randomly gifted. You can have two beautiful people not have an unattractive child. You can have two very, very ugly people, we'll say, for crassness and lack of a better term, give birth to a gorgeous child. You can have somebody who was born kind of just this awkward, skinny, weird kid that ended up growing up to be, you know, just absolutely stunning, and vice versa. You can have this very, very just cute child that was like, oh my gosh, so adorable. And then they just kind of grew up and it all just kind of fell apart. So it's randomized. We have no control over it. There's no way to choose to give birth to something that would be considered societally attractive. It's just a lottery. It's like, good luck plugging in that, hoping to go to a casino and shaking out a desirable facial structure. So moving on, number two. At the end of the day, it's worthless. Beauty is worthless when it comes to this. Beauty is a great thing that we all enjoy, and there's nothing wrong with enjoying it, but the way that we're doing it, particularly in this, when it comes to us as a species, it's worthless. And things that are worthless that are misused or brought into very valuable things, just like our human spirit. Hey y'all, I hope you're enjoying the episode. We're going to keep diving after this quick break. If you've ever found yourself in an endless YouTube loop trying to fix a relationship or understand a destructive emotional habit, you actually don't need more information. You need detailed action steps specific to you. And at carapayton.com, you can find exactly that. For anyone who struggles with codependency, one-sided relationships, emotional addictions, losing themselves in a relationship, attaching too quickly, or chronically stuck in toxic dynamics, or just always seems to be in a love crisis, there's finally a course for that. And no, not just more bullet points and surface knowledge. It's the deep dive you've been needing to end the cycle and move forward. I'm so proud of this course. It's personal and it's powerful. No buzzwords or poetic nonsense that keeps you circling around the bullseye. We go deep, we go there, and we expose the core of the whole thing. And it's cheaper than therapy. If you've been looking for the answer, it's finally here. So sign up or get more information at carapayton.com in the courses tab. It is destructive when we take something worthless and bringing it in to the housing of our soul and our spirit and how we define our worth. When we bring something that is totally randomized and utterly worthless into our self-worth, and we come up empty to our own definition that we're not, I can't think of anything more destructive. Number three, at the end of the day, you guys, it's an ever-moving target. Thin eyebrows were in when I was a kid. We all shaved that sucker as thin as Christina Aguilera. It was just awful. We had where it was just like blue glitteries, and then in the 80s it was this, and in the 70s it was this, and in the 60s it was this. It's a moving target. Once we decide that thin is beautiful, we decide that now it's this is beautiful. We decide that now it's like these big, thick Kim Kardashian eyebrows were popular just 2 years ago, and now already we've already decided that it's like this weird waxed, I don't even know what we're doing now. Eyebrows are probably the easiest way to talk about how this moving target ever so slightly changes year by year. It's like, what are we doing with our eyebrows? That's how you can tell. It's like, well, that's not in anymore. We have the high-waisted now. We have low-waisted. I remember when I was a teenager, it was the low-waisted, like, super low-cut little jean that nobody even fit in. It was insane. And now we're basically wearing these high-waisted JNCO / mom jeans. I don't even know what we're doing. And here's the thing about the ever-moving target is, why is it an ever-moving target? Because the world would never have you believe you're beautiful. If you start believing that, you're buying out of the gaslighting of the world that you're not, or that you need something else to attain it. And that's not going to work in that current setup. Number four, the biggest proof of the thing that I last said is that this being an ever-moving target is that the way that we are inverting what's beautiful and what's not to kind of keep people always offset is this recent inversion of glamorizing obesity as if it should be celebrated in and of itself. In and of itself. I'm not talking about not celebrating somebody because they are obese. I'm talking about celebrating obesity in and of itself. We are killing people by rewarding them with the social privileges or whatever the hell we are trying to do by reverse admonishing our past life bully guilt and not loving her enough to say, I love you for you, but I love you enough to say, I don't love you where you are. There's not enough makeup and slay queen energy to compensate for the fact that they're going to contour their way into an early grave. It's not loving. We are celebrating unhealthy. And you can be obese and beautiful. But let's not mistake and reframe obesity for health. We're in all of this lumping in, we're doing anybody a disservice. And not to mention, it almost seems like this weird, sick trick. You know when like, do you guys remember She's All That? That movie where it's like she was a nerd, she was actually beautiful. It was, you know, typical 90s movie where she's actually beautiful, but they pose her as a nerd. So they give her this fake, half-assed makeover. And now she's all of a sudden stunning and everybody can see it. But she was like that the entire time, if not cuter, because she had her artsy, quirky personality. But they... If you'll notice in that movie, they falsely celebrated her as almost to her demise. Like the movie, if you guys don't know the movie She's All That, you remember the movie Carrie, where they celebrated her and they put her on stage and they gave her a crown and then they pranked her by dropping pig's blood all over her. It's this weird obsession with celebrating obesity for just obesity almost seems like this weird trap. Like we're making fun of them in our praise. It just feels very disingenuous and very phony. And we're ridiculing, moving on to the next one to kind of wrap it into that and piggyback off is that we do this and we ridicule anyone trying to be beautiful. And the ones that are not winning, but we want them to think they are, what is the purpose of it? This weird mean girl energy where we take even somebody who's naturally beautiful because we'll praise someone who's naturally beautiful because it seems like we should or that it's necessary, but there's almost seems to be a secret point of contention if we feel we don't measure up in the same way. If they're more beautiful than us, we give them this disingenuous praise of you're so beautiful, but we do it with this weird underlying subliminal jealousy. And so it's just become this very toxified way of relating to one another as well in our very communications and the way we position people up or tear people down. The last one is that it does, at the end of the day, it keeps us plugged into the system of the buying and consumption. And no, just to reference, I am not referring to, I do not think that these industries like the pharma and the Food and Drug Administration, and I don't think that the beauty, the food, and the drug administration all co-conspired to do this, like many believe, but they do run a business. They do run a ship that is supposed to be afloat, that is supposed to be, their primary objective is to make money. So at the end of the day, they are not considering your best interest. Even if they're not intentionally trying to keep you sick or addicted or whatever, I do believe that they know there are things that will get you to buy it again. And yes, it's things like sugar. It's like things like the little chemicals that they put in it that keep us hooked on it. Or it's the things that keep us dependent on buying it again because the very problem it causes is the problem it solves. And so yes, I do believe that each industry in and of itself is trying to stay afloat, which means it needs your return business, which, if there are ways that they can manufacture your return business by creating a little bit of a dependency, yes, I do believe 100% that they will do that. But I don't believe that, you know, the guys that created the medicine and the guys that created the food are like, you know what would be really funny is if the food made them sick and then we made them better. And then it just, like, I just think that it ended up being kind of the ancillary benefit that they all recognize and are not willing to stray away from. So with that, let's move on to the three ways that it is more productive. Number one, we have the fact of being a human species that beauty, things that are more beautiful, things that are more appealing, it indicates to the receptors of the human species on a very, very subliminal level what to cycle out or select for procreation. We have certain, you know, you talk about, you know, childbearing hips, and you talk about, you know, cheekbones and jawlines and structure and weight and body composition and things that are even just like the texture or softness of our hair. Did you know that for females specifically, that men, even if they don't want children, even if they're not an childbearing or a child creating age, they don't necessarily want to get married or have kids, it's something in their makeup, just their absolute humanistic survival with the desire, with the instinctual inherent desire to recreate another and populate, you know, the world. They will look at things that they don't even know that they're looking at, and they value things they don't even know that they're valuing. Things that indicate to them this would be a good genetic specimen to pair with to procreate. Beauty does do that. Beauty has indicators. If this is appealing, if this is attractive, it does indicate a good genetic pairing. So that's that's really interesting. And I have looked at that a lot. There's even things as simple as blonde hair indicates to a man that they're more fertile, and soft hair indicate, I mean, there's just that, there's your hips indicate your ability to not only bear a child, but then to easily give birth to a child. It's so strange and it's so wild, and learning things about our less sophisticated construct, it's really fascinating. Number two, it selects by subliminal markers for health. So beauty does indicate that you're healthy in a lot of ways. There are things where you can see in someone's skin whether or not they're eating inflammatory foods. You can see in someone's eyes whether or not they're well hydrated. There are things about beauty that indicate health. The last one, if we're focused on the right way to attain beauty, it kind of piggybacks on the last one I just said. That if we're focused on the right way to be, to attain a beautiful skin, attain beautiful hair, skin, it can be a great marker for our results, our habits, or our choices. So if you're bloated after a bad meal, if your skin breaks out after too much coffee or low hydration, etc., you can, if you're looking at the right ways to indicate beauty, you can tell if you're making healthy choices or not in a lot of ways. There are some ways that just do not indicate that. There's nothing about, you know, your colored eyelids that indicate anything that has to do with your health. But there's a lot of things, whether or not you have clear skin and good posture, and that tell you that you're making healthy slash beautiful choices. So then, if we're talking about the right way to attain health, what does that look, or attain beauty, what does that look like? The way that I have focused on it since my personal experience with being obsessed with the destructive ways to attain beauty, I have moved on to, how do you be more beautiful then? If I'm going to, you know, chomp at the bit at obsessing over becoming more beautiful, then what ways can I control? I can't just, you know, order cheek filler at home and do it myself. I just don't have the value structure that I used to, of like, it costs a lot of money and it's never maintenance. Do you ever notice, like, you'll get Botox and then 3 or 4 months later you have to do it again, and you get a lip filler and maybe it lasts, maybe it doesn't. It's also, that's a catch-22 lottery as well, where you just don't really know if that's going to last 6 months, or if you're going to have to do it yearly, if you're going to have to do it 3 times a year. It just became very unsustainable for me, and I'm not going to just throw away $1,000 every single time I feel a little low, to be honest. Like, it's like, yes, I would like strong cheekbones, but they're not mine. They're just this weird goop that sits there and dissolves away, and God knows what that's even doing to me. We're plugging in these like neurotoxins by our brain, and somehow we have justified that because it makes the skin on our forehead smooth. I personally do not hold a conviction for anybody who does that whatsoever. There is more compassion in my little pinky for people that do that. It's laughable to think that I would judge somebody for getting Botox. I have all the understanding in the world for anybody who still walks themselves into a med spa to do all the things. And you go do you, because there are ways that you can build up your self-confidence and self-esteem until you build up the wellspring of confidence from within you. If you need to do that to get yourself in the right place to feel that until you develop it, it is a bridge. It's a house made of straw, but it's a house. I will say that. I think that there are more sustainable and better ways and healthful ways, spiritual ways, to build up your self-confidence that have nothing to do with and no needles whatsoever involved. However, if we're talking about a woman who feels like a shell of herself and she's a needle marker away from feeling like she can get out of bed and believe that she can open her business or pick up her children or smile, I mean, I'm not knocking any of these things. But to move on to the how to be more beautiful in the way that I have adopted, that has been way more sustainable and way more gratifying and lasts a lot longer and is a hell of a lot cheaper, let's talk about it. Number one for me was focusing on my diet. And before you push pause and say, Kara, damn it, this is just so low-hanging fruit, bear with me, because I thought that this was also this weird, obscure, randomized, everybody says, this is what you eat, this is what you don't eat, and it never makes sense, and it doesn't work for me, I'm bloated after every meal, I'm miserable, I'm low energy, all the things. Okay, your girl's with ya, because big sister over here did the same things and was in the same foggy, uncertain chaos. My diet was madness, and I was doing all the quote-unquote right things. However, I was still going through constant bloating, constant discomfort. I didn't know what to eat. I didn't know what to eat. I didn't know how to eat. I didn't know how much to eat, how often to eat, what times to eat. I was just like, this whole subject for me was such a pain point that I had almost this weird hate relationship with food, where I was almost so removed from the idea that I had any control over what happened to my body because of what I put in it, that I was like, you know what, hell with it, just whatever, there's no rules. And then I would I would be so miserable and in so much pain and discomfort that I'm like, okay, nothing but rules, let's go to that. And I went to the extreme polarity, the opposite, and I had so many rules that I burned myself out. And I was like, you know what? I went back to fuck it mode again. I was like, you know what? Hell with this. I'm doing this in a no rule way again. And it was just this jarring back and forth whiplash of, I don't know what to do. And I'm going to try to take control again. And I don't know what to do. And I'm going to try to take control again. At the end of the day, what ended up working for me. Now, first, before I say that, I am not a dietitian or nutritionist. Do your thing. But listening to my own body was the marker. That relationship with myself became so much more deep and intimate on a level I have never experienced by just eliminating everything and introducing. And then introducing. What makes my body mad? And when I say that, what is an inflammatory versus non-inflammatory food for me? Not what some intolerance test tells me or a sensitivity test tells you. But what actually does my body hate having to process? If it doesn't like processing it, the processing of it is going to cause inflammation in your body. It's the most rudimentary way that I could say an inflammatory food is something you put in your body and your body gets really, really pissed off at you for. And it can come in so many different things, even as weird and as obscure as joint pain. And mine was bloating. That was my biggest marker. And turns out one of the things is I was eating too damn fast. I was horking stuff down and basically swallowing food that wasn't chewed. So I stopped that. But then I moved into a diet that's so easy for me. And I can share more, but I don't want to just give like a regimen of saying eat this and not this and it's going to work for you, because I don't know that. What worked for me is meat, fruit, and vegetables. Meat, fruit, and vegetables. That's what works for me. And I meal prep the same dang thing, and I have the same dang thing every day. And I have my zags when I really feel like a zag, but you know what? My taste buds have changed so much, I don't really feel like zags a lot. Now, come Shark Week, for all my lady friends out there, there is a week out of the month where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to zag a little bit more than I'm going to zig. But let's be real, I slip back out of it and I go right into it in another week. And I just, okay, we're back on the zig, not so much zag. But you need to develop to where you know your body well enough to pick up its signals. It's so important that you can put something in your body and get a signal. Honestly, it's almost instantly anymore that I feel, it's like I'll have swallowed a couple bites. I'll be a bite or two into whatever I'm eating. And I can already tell, you know what? My stomach isn't into this. I'm getting the gurglies already. I'm getting that warmth in the pit of my stomach. All of those things are just saying, you know, it's kind of, I'm already feeling that just, it's not always necessarily a pain, but it's this weird discomfort that kind of starts popping up. And I think that our body can even before it's in your stomach, in your gut, those enzymes and everything has such an intelligence to it. It can say, oh great, it's this again. It's this dairy infused something. It's this gluten loaded thing that she's eating. And it sends this discomfort signal that's supposed to tell you, hey, stop eating this. I hate it. And we ignore it. So focusing on your diet and then knowing your body and developing a relationship with your body well enough to where you can hear that signal of, hey, this sucks. I know it tastes good. Your brain and your gut are two different brains, and your gut is so much more for your inherent good than your brain. Your brain wants its dopamine. It wants its sugar. It wants its pleasure. It's like a monkey that's hitting that button over and over and over when they did that experiment where it's like, if every single time the monkey hit the button, it had an orgasm, and it's just sitting there banging on that button. Anytime you're eating something, it's giving you pleasure. And I want you to picture your monkey mind bashing down a red button over and over to your detriment, even though this is a terrible idea for you. Let's move on. I think monkeys and orgasms and red buttons is enough for point number one. Number two, okay, guys, I'm gonna pre-disclose for this. I hate water. I really do. I just can't get into it. I have to have a mouthful of dust and sand in the middle of a desert, living like a lizard, have sweated in my entire body weight of water before I even want to sip. I just don't like water. I really don't. So I will say hydration, knowing that I'm a complete and utter and total hypocrite in saying that. I have to put lemon in. I have to put tea bags in. I have to put apple cider vinegar, and I have to put things in my water. And for me, it works. And I've heard people say that if you put things in your water, it digests through the stomach and it keeps you bloated because it keeps your food, you know, you're lowering the acidity of your stomach lining. And so it's not digesting your food as well. And then I've had somebody from a functional medicine clinic say, no, that's not true. It all counts as water. Just some people count Diet Coke as water. So literally just like as your water intake, anything that's water, drink your butts off. So take that for a grain of salt. For me, you know, because it's just such a resistance to drink plain water, I do put things in my water. If you can stand plain water, I know people that love it. I have no idea what the hell's wrong with you. But if you love plain water, just up your water. That for me, for energy, for skin clearing, for my scalp, honestly, the way that my hair gets oily or not, it's how much water I've been drinking. If I have really, really bad shark week, it's usually because of lack of hydration. So hydration is huge. And for me, my biggest thing, one thing that is just a hack for me in the morning is I do take Spoiled Child. I'm not probably going to renew my subscription this next time because I'm doing so many other things that support my gut and my skin and all of that, that I don't need another supplement. So, but I do, it is a thick flavored, almost a syrup type thing. It has a lot of extra benefits, but I use that as like a syrup to flavor like a homemade kombucha that I make. And my homemade kombucha is not kombucha. It's something that translates to me as a kombucha because it has the same benefits and I love it. So it's a combination of a tablespoon of lemon juice, a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, and a sparkling water, plus this Spoiled Child stuff. Now, when my Spoiled Child supplement runs out, I'll just do these other things, but I'll just up my apple cider vinegar and maybe my lemon juice and who knows, maybe something to sweeten it up, maybe my passion tea. I don't know. And then Tazo makes a passion tea that, you guys, it's so good. And I just put that with lemon juice and I do put a little bit of monk fruit in it for sweetness. And those are my, like, it tastes like a sweet, sweet treat to me, but it's apple cider vinegar cannot be over. If you can stand to sip vinegar, you guys, it's been a game changer. And Marie Forleo has a podcast where she just shared how that can actually help your body. If you're going to eat something sweet, drink apple cider vinegar before it, and your stomach will actually, it processes it better. It doesn't just go straight store to fat. So moving on, hydration, great. Do that. Movement. So many times our beauty involves the way that we perceive our body. And this cannot be understated. Your mind will also benefit from movement. So it's twofold. You're going to love the way your body looks more. So just you are making that marker of the shallow aesthetic by movement. And number two, your body, your brain's ability to change itself, neuroplasticity. It's called neuroplasticity. Your brain's ability to not stay stuck in the same old crap. Your brain's ability to adopt new information, not adopt new habits, adopt new emotions, adopt new. Hey all, I hope you're enjoying the episode. We're going to keep diving after this quick break. If you're moving toward a dream or goal, you've likely heard someone say, you just need to get out of your own way, which would be helpful if you knew how. Find out what's holding you back at carapayton.com/audit, where you are walked into the subconscious of your own mind to uncover those answers. This year could really be the year everything changes. There is a place within you where your happiness, health, and wealth is alive and well. It all begins by getting beneath the surface. Thought patterns is neuroplasticity, and it's the number one way to create neuroplasticity, your brain's ability to change itself, is movement. If you want to change your brain chemistry, the fastest way to change your brain chemistry is move your body. Move your body. And my friend Sean Crane gave me a great rule of thumb to work for in my life. It's just never skip twice. You skipped one day, fine. Life throws curveballs. Life throws curveballs multiple times a week. So just don't skip twice. You skipped once, get in the next day. Don't skip twice. That one's pretty simple. So moving on to next one is skin, hair, and nails. Your skin, hair, and nails is probably one of the biggest things that we fight in the beauty industry. We want good skin, we want good hair, we want good nails. There are natural ways to do this from the inside out that do not involve buying some incredible product that's going to mask it, fix it, change it, alter it, whatever. Things that you don't need products for. There are things that will support your skin, support your hair, and support your nails. Hydration's one of them. Diet's definitely one of them. Supplements is one of them, which is our next one. That will support great skin, great hair, great nails. Those are natural ways to be beautiful that you don't actually have to pay for. And that one, I believe I may have put it under hydration and then moved up. So we'll move on. That one's a separate one. I'm reading notes as I go. I don't do these things where I script every single word. So have a little forgiveness for me. But skin, hair, and nails, there are ways that you can support the health of those things. And the health of those things does equate to the beauty of those things. Healthy nails and unhealthy nails One of them is beautiful, one is not, and I'll bet you can take your pick on which one. Moving on to the supplements and blood work. Supplements and blood work I have together because blood work confirmed by a functional medicine doctor can indicate to you what you're deficient in. If you're deficient in vitamin D, it shows up and translates in X, Y, and Z. If you're deficient in estrogen, it can show up in X, Y, and Z. If you're deficient in if your thyroid is out of whack, that translates to weight gain and bloating. There's so many different things that you can try to be doing all the right things, and your blood work is literally the map. So I don't know, my age range has shifted in the last, my audience age range has shifted in the last 2 years. So I think I have a little bit more of an older audience, but I do still have a very, very vast 25 to 34 year old audience. So 25 to 34 is a little bit before the curve on when I would say these things really, really start to show up. But any woman, I can speak to women on this. Sorry, guys. I don't know your age range of when you guys really need to be focusing on blood. But ladies, 35 and over, if you have not had your hormones checked, if you have not had your blood work done, if you don't know what your thyroid is doing, I guarantee you something in there is going to reveal to you a hack, a cheat code, a shortcut by understanding what you are not getting from your food, from your hydration, from your movement that you could be taking. Our food, sad day, guys, sad day, but our food is not as nutritious as it was. It's not as nutrient dense as it was in the 1940s and 50s. We are so mechanized, so automated, so overly manufactured in even our produce, that our produce does not have near as many. You could be eating the same batch of spinach that you were eating for your entire life, but over the generations and generations and generations of that soil, that same soil being tilled to pieces, and we are using the nutrients in that soil that we can't keep up. There's so many more of us here than there were in the 1950s, and there's a consequence to that. And unfortunately, the consequence has come to, we can grow the same kind of food, but we are having to use so many other mechanisms and cheat codes to produce the amount of food that we need now to cover this earth that our food's just not as nutrient dense. So that means we're going to have to rely on faithful supplementation to make up the difference, to stay healthy. And I did not actually think that that was the case. I was like, I don't need vitamins. I don't need supplements. I just need to eat more of the right thing. But nothing was changing, even after I firmly decided to change my diet. So when I got my blood work back, so many things made sense to me. So many things. And my symptoms were answered. And I was given supplements. I was given a hormone detox. And I did have a few things in my thyroid that they're adjusting. And I was told that gluten and dairy probably need to become a thing of my past, particularly gluten because of what it was doing to my triglycerides. And so I moved into a supplementation in the morning, and I eat the same thing every day that doesn't have any of my inflammatory markers or things that my body is particularly inflamed or sensitive to. My recommendation for where you do the blood work is going to cross, maybe toe and cross that line of telling you what you should do or should not do. So listen to yourself, listen to your body, listen to your own internal guidance and take it for what it is. But I would recommend seeing a functional medicine doctor over a regular, you know, primary care. The reason is primary care, they're band-aids. They're, here's the cut. Cool, got it, here's your Band-Aid. Or these look normal. These ranges look normal. These levels look normal. The problem with that is, depending on the area that you live in, their normal is going to lump you in to a mass average depending on your demographic. The problem with anybody that's in the Midwest or down south or areas where our obesity is higher, our health is lower, things like that, is that you're being told everything's great for you. Everything's great for you. Your levels are fantastic. You're in the top 10 percentile. Compared to what is my question to that? They're going to look at your levels and they're going to take you with one of every 1,000, 5,000 per capita, whatever your, however densely populated your area is. And they're going to tell you, well, this is the same 40-year-old man who's 150 pounds overweight that you're getting measured up against. So functional medicine, they listen to you specifically. They listen to your symptoms. They look at what you should be operating at. They look at the level of ideal health. See, in primary care, they're looking to get you back to baseline. They're looking to get to an average health. There is such an overload in the health world, and I'm not saying that this is the reason why they do this, but they are just trying to make everyone leave fine. Functional medicine is looking for the ideal, the best possible. So if you're, we'll say optimal, that's the word I'll use. They're looking for your optimal level of health. So it's a significantly different range, a more specified range. Yes, your normal, your levels are normal according to your per capita mass average. However, you, at your age, at your weight, at your gender, at your everything, really ideally and optimally operate here. So I'm going to supplement this, or I'm going to recommend this, or I'm going to recommend you discontinue or start this. Hopefully that makes sense. For anybody that's in the Kansas City area, I would recommend you visit Rock Creek Wellness. They are, Rock Creek Wellness and AC Wellness are two places that I have personally experienced massive breakthrough in my own health dynamics. And they are both local to the KC area. And they are both wildly amazing and educated. So I will include those in the show notes that where you can link the, up to those and see them. But if you are not in my area, look up a good functional medicine doctor. Do your research. Go in. If you have had a continuous issue of something that's just not, it just doesn't make sense. Things are just not working and you don't know what's going on and you've say, you know, like me, you've quote tried everything. Try this. Moving on, one that this is where everybody, I can picture a crowd of people holding the stones. They've held the stones this whole time and this is where they let them fly. Your stimulants, your toxins, your addictions, these do really compound in the worst way. Mine was my anxiousness was caffeine. My anxiousness, my moodiness was sugar. My, we'll say, sleeplessness and headaches was alcohol. My discomfort, inflammation, joint pain, and whatnot was dairy. My everything else that was pissed off in my body was gluten. So your stimulants and toxins really are hurting you way more than you think they are. If you were to give it up, if you were to give up one for 10 days, 2 weeks, and just see how you feel, I was hopelessly addicted to coffee. Hopelessly. Definitely didn't want to get away from gluten. Definitely had no desire to get away from sugar. And I can tell you with full confidence that an innumerous amount of things has changed by getting rid of those. That's where I'll leave that. Moving on to the last one. There is nothing more beautiful than a non-anxious inner peace. And I know that sounds very, very cliche and typical, but can we stop glorifying hot mess? Can we stop with the, you can't see beauty from a hot mess express. I'm sorry. We've done this thing where it's like, she's a hot mess, she's a hot mess, she's a hot mess. What if she wasn't? How much better would our lives be if we found ways to be intentional with our day, with our mindset, with our boundaries, with our routines, with our daily structure, with our relationships, with our conversations, with the way we get out of bed, with the way we take care of our homes, with the way we get dressed, with the way we take care of our body, where we are not a hot freaking mess all the time. I remember the day that I dismissed that normality that said, oh, I'm just a hot mess, you know, late for everything, and all that, when I just was like, no, you know what, not anymore. It's old, it's tired, and it's not doing anything. Some of the most beautiful people I know are the people that are just like, they are always just feel so good to be around them. They are just such an energy that I am so attracted to. And they don't even have to be beautiful. That's another thing. There was a story of somebody told me where there was this woman who worked at a diner. And I believe it was my neighbor, her husband, used to go to this diner all the time after golf with the guys. And they would go have a coffee and breakfast, and then they would all go home. Or lunch or whatever. I don't know how long golf lasts. But he would go home and he's like, she's just such a beautiful person. I don't know. She lights up the whole place. She's got this charisma that makes the whole place just feel good. It just is so great. And this wife started to get kind of like, not insecure, but just kind of curious. Like, is she single? Is she flirting with you? What's the deal? And they actually went, he took her with her one Sunday where golf was canceled. And this woman, she said, like, this woman was like the plainest, most homely, average Jane that you've ever met. She wasn't anything to look at all. She goes, but I'll be damned if he was not completely accurate. She is a light. She is so calming. She is so fun. Her energy and her spirit is so beautiful that I did leave thinking this woman was 10 times more beautiful than the moment I walked in. So can I dare you and challenge you to get rid of that status quo that being this hot, chaotic mess is something to be lauded or praised? Can we just leave that behind? Being a hot mess, it was humorous in our 20s. It might still be kind of sort of humorous when we have kids in our 30s, or life is just getting chaotic and we've got a lot of things going on around the holidays, whatever. I get when it's become a catchphrase that covers a multitude of missing the mark. However, when we're making it our day-to-day personality, ritual, and identity, something's not right. And if you're a hot mess, Your kids' lives are affected by that. They become a hot mess. Your house becomes a hot mess. Your health becomes a hot mess. Your peace becomes a hot mess. Your workplace becomes a hot mess. Your dating life becomes a hot mess. Everything becomes a hot mess when it's all stemming from you and your identity and your inability to get it under control. So that may have been the worst place to stop an episode, but know that I love you. Know that I was also came from the hot mess club and came from it. And the peace in my life, the peace in my day-to-day, the peace in my home, I will say that my life has become more beautiful when I stopped accepting that it could be nothing more than a hot mess. It can be a refuge. Your home can be a refuge. Your body can be a place you enjoy being. Your mind can be a place you enjoy being. And if it's not, I really always say meditation is always the answer. Meditation is the biggest piece of my supportive routine, self-supporting routine. And my meditations, as you may know, you can find my meditations on Insight Timer. You just look me up, Kara Payton, on Insight Timer, and I have a whole library there. There are meditation courses on my website, and meditation really is, no matter what you do, even if you just start with sitting with yourself for 5 minutes in the morning, you don't have to listen to music, you don't have to have it guided, just open your window, listen to the birds for 5 minutes, set a timer if you have to, and just be the one that wakes up with you in charge of your day, because you deserve to have a moment to yourself to decide who's going to show up to that day. I love you. I'm with you and for you. Every single thing that I referenced in this episode that you may need to refer back to will be in the show notes, and I will see you next time. Now we want to hear from you. What stirred you, helped you, or lit you up with new inspiration? Drop me a line at karapayton.com and let me know. If you like this episode, share it with a friend. This might just be the thing they needed to hear. And thank you for joining me for another episode of the Happiness Habit Podcast. Until next time, keep moving.
Your life starts when you allow your authentic self to shine through, and the world needs that light in it.